EMS on the Mountain is an entertainment, educational, and commentary product recorded by Sean and Mike and produced by them. Nothing recorded by Sean, Mike, or any of the guests of the show is endorsed nor authorized by their respective employers or agencies unless explicitly outlined. All commentary and statements made are their own. Always follow your respective medical protocols. Nothing said on this platform should be considered medical direction. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to the EMS on the Mountain podcast, a show for those interested in austere and wilderness medicine. This podcast provides insight into the unique aspects and challenges of bringing modern EMS into wilderness and austere environments.
Holy crap, that was disturbing. You guys missed a just disturbing entrance by my co-host friend. All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of EMS on the Mountain. And just so you know, my friend, you are on mute. So if you go to answer something, we won't hear you. Today, we're going to talk about basically what it's like to be the patient, what the experience is from the patient's point of view with their interaction with responding EMS crews and hospital staff, and some things you should maybe consider that not all providers do. Not all providers have had the experience of having been a patient. I have been a patient, I will call it realistically, several times, but I'll briefly talk about two of them. So my first one was, I would say, from the patient perspective, my experience with the responding EMS crew was extremely poor. At the time, I was an EMT, and we'll say that I had experienced a fall from height, be the easiest way to describe this one. And I hit the ground and heard a very loud popping noise in my spine. Had an odd sensation shoot through my body right quick. Individual was next to me was like, "Holy crap! Dude, are you all right?" And it was like, "Yeah, no." And so they went and found the responding EMS crew, brought them in. And this is back in mid-90s. The backboard and the C-collar were king. So you would expect anybody who took a reasonably good fall from height with potential spinal involvement to be C-collared at a minimum and then put on a backboard. I got the quick pick him up, chuck me on a cot, basically, toss me in the back of the truck, and drove me off to the ED. No exam, no patient assessment of any flavor, which was interesting. A couple of quick questions, I'm sure, for the charting, like name, date of birth kind of stuff. And then I got to the ED, and then things proceeded, I would say, as you could expect for somebody that took a fall and possibly injured their spine, x-rays and some other stuff. But I remember laying there in the back of this truck, driving to the hospital, doing my own physical assessment. Okay, start at my head, right? Working my way down, going through my own nerve assessment because absolutely zero from the crew. And I know they were EMTs, but EMTs learn patient assessments. So it was a little surprising. And then second example I'm going to talk about was basic assessments, like trauma assessments, really weird. And then for me, my second experience, again, it was another fall. I've had some falls in my day. This one was ground level, but I took a tumble and landed on my head and neck. So again, we're talking about some potential spinal concerns, right? And the two medical folks that responded to me on that one were absolutely top notch, right? This is a good example too of some wilderness stuff. This was an austere environment. It was wet and stuff. And so it was like, get me out of the wet, get me warm as we're waiting, or they were waiting for the transport unit to arrive. But did a solid neuro-focused assessment, a good trauma assessment, looked at everything, addressed any concerns that were there at the time, which there weren't any, other than I purportedly lost consciousness for a couple of quick seconds there. And then again, fairly uneventful truck ride into the ED. And then my ED experience was absolutely horrendous. I don't know if it was new nurse night, new tech night, but people just kept coming in. And I get there and they do, of course, the trauma naked, cut me all out of my stuff, which one of my favorite thing, my daring, my good brother from another mother, Charles, Angry Chuck. They were getting ready to cut off my boots and their pair of good Danners. And he's like, oh, not the boots. I'll get those. And so God bless my brother for not cutting off a $200 pair of boots in the ED, because this was, again, back in the mid-90s, and I would have been sad because $200 was a lot of money back then. Yeah. Right? Like the same boots now go for like almost 400 inflation in 30 years. But the ED staff like kept coming in, like reinventing the wheel, like every 10 minutes. And it was like, holy crap, has nobody talked to anybody in this room? And I was like, and again, yeah, I was still an EMT, but I had this idea of what should happen in a hospital based on just clinical rotations and some things. And I don't know how long it was before I even saw a physician to even come in and make his, all right, let's see how things look. All right, we'll get some scans done and we'll see where we're at. And it's okie dokie. Many hours later, I just hobble out sore. Might've strained some stuff in my neck, but no legit big serious injuries to worry about. It's just one of those things you do. And so for me, from my perspective, I had two completely conflicting experiences from both ED and the EMS side, right? One set of EMS providers pre-hospital were fantastic. Really knew what they were doing, squared away, took care of everything they needed to do. And then another set that just, they might as well have been uncertified, just lay people that tossed me to the back of a pickup truck for all intents and purposes and drove me somewhere, right? Like it was that bad. And then two completely different hospital experiences, right? One was spot on, rolled in. Oh, okay, great. I don't think they gave me a full trauma alert on that one, but they were very aware and on the ball with getting a good assessment, neuro assessments, getting x-rays done and everything else before they even moved on to anything else, like any checking on any minor stuff. And then the second one was like, man, I was probably in that bed for 3 hours and had seen like 18 different nurses and techs, like starting IVs, no pain management. Not that I need anything on that second one, but literally hours before I saw a physician. And I can tell you that, no, this was not a busy ED. This was like 2 a.m. Not a lot of people in there. Like I was conscious, alert, and oriented, and I know exactly what hospital it was. And, you know, that 20 some beds, and there were probably 4 rooms that had patients in them. So it was just like, what the hell's going on with this? And where's all this going, right? The kind of one of the things we're going to talk about today is what it's like as the patient and what you need to be remembering, right? And I will say that you need to be talking to your patients. They are people. They are injured. They could be extremely frightened, scared, or nervous at any age, whether they're a 3-year-old who might have just broken his arm, fallen off the swing set, or a 75-year-old who had I'm getting older and I fell and broke an arm, right? Like, that's what I hear about resorts in Florida. So remember your patients are people. And it's like, oh, of course my patients are people. But I grew up in a mantra of the patient feels no pain. We can discuss that thing one day's days on an episode. But you got to remember that your patients are people and you need to be talking to them. You have to be, from my experience, that bit of comfort for them. While you might be the guy that's doing some possibly seriously invasive procedures or some minorly invasive things, and even if you ride that in from a totally BLS perspective, just being there, paying attention to your patient and providing some empathy and support can go a long way. I had that with one group where I got zero. Like, they didn't care about anything but the minimum amount of information they needed for a chart. And that's all I got from them. And had I not been a provider and aware of kind of what was going on physiologically or the potentials myself, man, I would have been really nervous about, did I just break my back, kind of thing. Turns out I did. It's a minor fracture, no big deal. Wasn't transverse, so that's good. So there's no core damage other than that initial shock and some swelling, which is what caused my initial problems. But and then I had another EMS crew who were on me, with me the whole time, talking to me, reassuring, reassessing, stayed with me in the ED for quite a while, different than normal EMS crew run, and made sure everything was good to go before they took off. So it's two different things. And I will say for our friends on the wilderness austere side, when you've got a patient for hours on end, say you're doing a 6, 8 hour, 10 hour litter extract. When you're going to stop and take a rest for the litter crews and you set your patient down or you put out little foldy arms or whatever your system uses on your litters, don't just step away from your patient, because now that patient is strapped into a Stokes, laying there, supine, staring up at the sky. Maybe there's a helmet on their head. Maybe they've got one of those visor shields that covers over the top. They're all strapped in. They're feeling a little uncomfortable. They can't just get up and stretch their legs like you can, walk away, take a pee, things like that. And when you walk away, man, especially if you're thinking some sort of spinal thing and they're in a collar and some things, and they can't turn left and right and look and see what's going on or talk to somebody, that can be very unnerving for a patient, especially because they're in that thing for hours. Got to be talking to those patients. You got to stay by their side. If you, as the provider, need to walk away because you got to go take a pee or you got to do something, have somebody come over and say, hey, man, would you please sit with the patient? Hey, Mike, this is my partner over here, Stan. He's going to sit with you for a couple of minutes while I step over here, take care of some business. I'll be right back. And then Stan can sit there and talk to your patient, like answer questions or just be there present so they know they're not alone. Because I have seen on a couple of carryouts where the providers are tired, and I get it, right? They're tired. They've been at this for hours now. And that rest period comes and they take 5 steps away and they sit down on their ass because they just want to get some rest too. Man, now that patient's just sitting there, everything's going on around them and they feel very alone. And this is also one of those reasons, I think, as a wilderness austere provider, if you work in a place that does extracts like this, you should at least once in your life be the patient on a carryout and see what it's like, because it is a different experience. And that's where we're going to talk to Mike. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just by, yeah. You do. Yeah. 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 Yes. Yeah. Mine were like 30 years ago. Mike's was, yeah, oh, 10 days ago. We'll just start. And I guess we'll just lay it out quick. You took a blow to your dome, right? So you did hit your head, right? So there's at least one good laceration. A couple look like a couple of minors, right? And we're just going to, yes. And I can still see a little blood in the corner of your eye. And so with that, so we'll start there. That potential head trauma. We'll leave it at that. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it was a slightly altered. And no, I was not there for this. I've just obviously heard the story like 1,000 times because he likes to complain a lot, but whatever. Which is not true. And so just because this is very recent, we wanted to talk about this because, again, it brings up some good points and reinforces some things as providers need to be remembering. So we'll start that. And then, so let's just go, Mike. Once you were, we'll say, sitting around waiting for the cruise, how was your initial Yeah. And how is that, Mike? Invention of the devil himself. Oh, yeah. Yes. Drama naked. Nice. And I'm going to interrupt your flow, and I'm sorry for this, but this is a good point for our fellow providers, right? Man, we're just a couple minutes out from the hospital. We'll let them give you those pain meds when we get there. Right? That's bullshit, because exactly what just happened to you, and it might not be hours, but it could easily be 30, 45 minutes before somebody, because the nurse is going to get them. ED nurses can't draw meds on their own. They've got to get an order from a physician. They can make the recommendation, but a physician's got to put in the order, because that's the only way they can get the meds through Pyxis if there's no order for it. And so the doc's got to see you. He's got to put in the order. The nurse has got to get it. Maybe it's something that's got to come from pharmacy because they're out. I don't know, but it could take time. So that's the thing. If you're a provider and your patient's in pain and they need pain management, I don't care if I've given my last shot of fentanyl to somebody as I'm getting ready to open the back doors and wheel them out. Okay, here we're going to go bump you up one more time, because it might be a while before you get anything once you're in here. And sure enough, oh wow, that's surprising. Yeah. Nice. Excellent. Hooray for lab values. Yeah. Yeah, the dude that's fine in room two. Yeah. No, 100%. Nice. Oh yeah, I'd say this is EMS emergency department wide. It's a thing. Like, and I think it's pretty much a thing everywhere. Holy cow. We have a couple listeners from the UK. Man, I'm seeing reports of EMS crews hanging out in their ambulances waiting for rooms or holding walls in the ED for hours, right? And for us, I think worst case I've ever had is about a half hour, but this is common everywhere. Like EDs get crowded. As you mentioned, like the lower acuity patients getting bumped down in priorities, the more severe people come in. That's just triage. That's the way it works, which is where you and I have the understanding of that's how it works. And you can understand why your care continuum has slowed. But I know that's why a lot of people complain, like, oh my God, and then it took me this long to see somebody. And it's like, yeah, but there were three really bad people trying to die actively that are more important than you right now. And I get it. Your emergency is the most important thing to you. But in an ED, whether it's 10 rooms or 50 rooms, EDs get busy, right? And then, yeah, there's, like you said, it's not one nurse to one patient. It's one nurse to four, maybe six rooms, one doc to every 12 patients. Who knows? Right? That depends on your systems. And that's, again, a thing as a provider. Know the limitations of your system, right? If it's going to be a while and you think they're going to need more pain meds, if you can give them that last bump within whatever your protocol windows allow before you turn over officially to a nurse, then do it. Or I don't know, Zofran, something benign too. Like, I'm just starting to feel nauseous. Oh, really? Here, quick, take this pill, right? We get that on board for you. Because it might be, again, 30 minutes and they've already puked twice and now Zofran's really not working. Blankets, getting your patient blankets when they're getting turned over. Man, we get patients blankets all the time before we leave. And it's little stuff that helps the nursing crew out too, right? That's one less thing they've got to run around and try and do or find a tech to go do because, again, they've got patients. So as the provider, if there's any of those little things that you can help your patient out with, yeah, man, do those things. Again, be your patient's advocate. It doesn't end just because you've got a signature from a nurse. If you're still sitting there, it's like, oh, you're feeling cold. Hey, I'm going to go get him a blanket. Oh, hey, that'd be great. Thanks. Your nursing staff will appreciate the help too. So. Especially if you're using the good gooey ones that really are made to stick to you. I just go, the annual stress test for the physical. It's like, they're like, all right, we're going to put these things on you. It's like, yeah, I'm aware. Like, you want me to put them on? Right. And then it's like, yeah. Then you're like, I'll peel them off. Yeah. Cause then you're peeling all that stuff off. And you get home and you take a shower and it's still sticky. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I trim myself down too. Yeah, that's. Oh, yeah, that happens a lot. You're running your brother-in-law's cardiac arrest and some crazy shit. Yay. Yeah. Yeah, and I will, and that's a good one, and that kind of ties back to what we were mentioned before about a bunch of strangers standing around a Stokes carrying him out. We actually had Ed, but I guess it's been a couple of years now, but we actually had a patient who told us, like, yeah, could you not let that guy carry the litter next to me anymore? Because he makes some weird comments. He didn't make anything that was, like, overtly, we'll say, wrong. It was just, he was trying to be good-natured and engaging, but the patient was very off-put by the behavior, and they didn't like it. And again, it wasn't like he was rolling down there telling some really inappropriate jokes or trying to ask him out on dates or anything weird. But the patient was like, hey, could you not have that dude by us again? And then I remember during the debrief, we brought that up. We didn't mention any names. And those people got very grumpy. We didn't say who. We're not calling anybody out. We're just saying as a rule of thumb, keep it to general pleasantries. Don't try to make jokes. Don't start asking about kids and your daughter and how she's doing and how's cheerleading. And just don't, unless you know them personally, which that's a whole nother dynamic you got to worry about. That professional behavior with your patients. And here's something too. Just because you think your patient might be unresponsive.
Maybe not.
They might be hearing things and their brain's recording it and they know. There's documented cases of people in basically comas and stuff who've woken up and going, oh yeah, and then you guys were talking to Uncle John about whatever and this and that. And they're like, holy crap. People's bodies process and shit. So be looking out for you. Yeah. Last to go, first to come back. Damn. Yeah. Yeah. And there's been supposition, very hard to test and actually do studies on this one, but there have been things where they have concern is that you say they've got no chance. And so that patient hears this, their brain processes it and decide, then we can quit this fight. And then they die very quickly on you, right? They just decompensate and life goes out because they no longer have to fight. I don't know. It makes sense to me. I could see that being a thing. It happens with conscious people who have been rescued in the austere environment, who've been lost in the woods for several days. They've been found. They're just the exposure to the environment and everything else has wrecked them. And then they get picked up. Their fight response of staying alive now relaxes to a point where they're suddenly dropping hypotensive, like everything's shutting down. Like, oh, I'm safe now. Boo. And those people, there's a lot of documented cases of that. And so keeping your patient in the fight, I think you got to remember that too. Don't be given the false hope piece. I think that's just something you need to remember, whether they're conscious or not. Don't be like, just because they're unresponsive, like your bad traumas. Oh man, there's no way this dude's going to make it. There's just, holy cow, I've never seen this bad before. There have been some really jacked up trauma patients who walk out of hospitals. It might take them a while to walk out, but there have been some people who are jacked up. Like, you think there's no way they're going to live through this head trauma, these gunshot wounds, whatever. And the next thing you know, you're like, holy crap, you're at some awards presentation and they're coming to give you a certificate for saving their life kind of shit. So, yeah, be that professional. Talk to your patients, even if you don't know they're listening. Like I always talk to my patients. It's also, and I do this when I teach new providers, when they're doing assessments, talk to your patient, but you're at the same time talking to yourself. And I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, back in the early episodes, right? Like, hey, I'm just going to be taking a look at your head. Right? And you're talking to yourself and you're coaching yourself through an assessment, but you're also letting your patient know what's going on. And I think something I like to do, this is for me with the trauma alert to the stroke alerts we bring in and stuff, is give your patient an idea of what to expect. Because, like you said, it's been this one-on-one interaction, or predominantly a one-on-one. You might have maybe another EMT or medic in the back with you, but it's been pretty one-on-one. You've established this little bit of rapport with your patient. And next thing you know, yeah, you're getting wheeled into the trauma bay and your mic, who knows what's going on. And it's holy cow, because it's a whole different perspective. Because now you're laying there and now you're freaking out because people are doing all kinds of stuff. So if you can give your patient a little bit of a heads up, what they can expect, hey, there's going to be a lot of people in this room. There's going to be probably a dozen people. They're going to be shouting a lot of stuff. I'll try to. Yeah, so they're going to. Yeah, say whatever's still on you when we wheel you in, they're going to finish taking it off. Because you all usually leave patients like in their boxers or whatever. And just because I don't have the ability to keep you, like, actually back in my trucks, these new trucks are pretty good for us, keeping patients warm with blankets and stuff. But pre-hospitally, in the austere environment, it's one of the rules for the exposure piece is not to overly expose because the environment is there. It's a thing. So they might not get trauma naked after your 8-hour carry out until they get to the ED. But try to prep them. Hey, a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of doctors, a lot of nurses, people doing a lot of things. Just try to relax. They're going to ask you a lot of the same questions I've already asked you. Just answer them to the best of your ability. If they ask you something new or different, don't say I've already answered that because they haven't heard it. Right. I try to give them the info, but they might want to hear it from you just because your perspective is different than my retelling of your story. And same thing with like stroke alerts. Your patient might be like stroking hard. Tell them, like, hey, we're going to go in and there's going to be a doctor. He's going to meet us there. He's going to do a quick evaluation. Then we're going to determine you might be going into CT scan and they're going to get a look at your brain and whatever. Let them know. And again, ease some of those fears we talked about at the beginning, just so they can know what to expect. And then it's not quite as bad. It's still going to be a crazy experience for them. I think one thing from your story is, and even from my more benign ones, we knew it was going to happen. And still, it's like, holy cow, that didn't go like I thought it was going to go. I thought I'd be a little calmer about that. And next thing you know, it's like,
That's cool.
Yeah, lights going by and then glimpses of faces in and out. Yeah. Yeah. And let's not forget, sea collars are the devil's work. No, I think that's really it. We've covered the big ones. Like, just, it's a different perspective. And like I said, if you get a chance to be the patient on a training exercise, be the patient. And not just like when they're... And you can during just like basic trauma or medical scenarios where you've got providers just doing basic assessments. But more specifically on the austere wilderness folks, putting people in the stokes, especially most of you might remember Mike and I do some work for a technical rescue course. And if you haven't been in the stokes as it's getting hauled up the side of a cliff face, for 100 feet or so, that is very unnerving if you don't know what's going on. And Mike's got more time than I do doing this, and I don't have an inconsiderable amount of it, right? Like, I've got a lot. And when I get strapped, because again, just being in the stokes and strapped down, now being in the stokes, strapped down, and being, you're looking at these two skinny ropes bringing you up 100 feet of vertical space. That is a different experience too. So remember that is the wilderness side, like talking to these patients, right? Like, I'm with you, I'm here. I'm with Mike, I don't generally advocate with the provider writing the same system up as the patient anymore. It's a catch 22, right? Yeah, you could be right there with your patient. You could talk to them, you can make a little physical contact, like we're here, we got you. But at the same time, it's just system-wise, it's maybe not the best, but different discussion. But be that patient, deep, know what it's like, and then don't like 5 minutes in the stokes go, oh yeah, that's terrible. No, man, be part of a carryout and be in that thing for a couple hours, even an hour. And then you'll realize that padding the voids and under the knees and the back of the head, that's for real. That's not just something you talk about, right? That's not just something you say in a scenario going, and I'll pad under the knees and the voids of the back and the back of the head stuff. No, that's real. You need to do that. And yeah, Mike and I have had many discussions about a way to wedges to get under the knees and behind the back to angle them up a little bit, just because it's so much more comfortable, right? But then yeah, you get into center of gravity and tipping and it becomes a trick, but one day we'll figure it out. We'll patent the system and you can all thank us. Anyway, that's all I got. Yay.
If you have any questions or comments or ideas for show topics, you can send us an email at theshow@emsonthemountain.com or hit us up on social media. We can be found on Facebook and Instagram at EMS on the Mountain, Twitter at EMSOTM, or you can engage with us and a whole community of wilderness EMS professionals at locals.com/wilderness EMS.
Until the next episode. Thanks for joining us, and until we see you on the mountain, train hard, be safe, and do good work.